We are coming to Purim, and today we're going to learn about the holiday of Purim. That's a very interesting class about what led to Purim, and we'll start to read, and then we'll see what's all about. Go ahead.
Behind the scenes of the Purim story, the state of the Jewish people in Ahasuerus' time. It was in the days of Ahasuerus, who ruled from Hodu to Kush, 127 lands.
That's the beginning of the Megillah, right? That was around 50 years after the destruction of the first temple. Now we have a quote from the Rebbe Rayatz. Rebbe Rayatz is the previous Rebbe, the father-in-law of this Rebbe. His name was Yosef Yitzchak. Rayatz is an acronym for Yud Yud Tzadik, is Yosef Yitzchak. And he was called by this name, the Rebbe Rayatz, or we call him the previous Rebbe. In any case, he discusses the whole thing, what led to the story of Purim. What happened there?
In the year 3392 after creation, during the Babylonian exile, the Jews were dispersed in many lands, including those ruled by Ahasuerus. Over 50 years had passed since the destruction of the first Holy Temple. They were torn away from their home, where they had witnessed the miracles in the Holy Temple and had heard the words of the prophets.
You know, they were exiled. What is exiled? No more prophets, no more temple, no more open miracles. The closeness that Jewish people enjoyed during the time of the temple is gone. They're in Babylon, between the non-Jews. It's already a different environment altogether. What happens to people who are being exiled? They're becoming assimilated. That's what happens. There is two things. There is intermarriage and there is assimilation. Assimilation doesn't mean that you're intermarried, but you're assimilated in the... You learn from the culture. You become a part of the culture. Continue.
In some of the countries in which they were now scattered, they were maltreated. In others, their contributions to society were recognized and they were treated accordingly.
Right? Just like today, some countries appreciate the Jews, others don't. In the countries that the Jews are being appreciated, they're even more welcome. You see, that's a problem of the if you are doing well in a country... Our success is our enemy. If we are doing well in the country, we are being even more welcomed, and more embraced, more assimilated. If there is anti-Semitism in the country, we are more gathering together. We are more keeping our identity. Continue.
Ahasuerus was by nature fickle, arrogant, wise in his own eyes, and short-tempered.
He was all the good things.
He was a mixture of good and evil, wisdom and foolishness altogether. Thus the sages expressed both opinions, Megillah 12. He was a clever king, and he was a foolish king.
Some opinions say he was a clever king. Some opinions say he was a foolish. The Rebbe says both of them are right.
In the times of his father Darius, and also in the early years of his own reign, the Jews in his provinces made a comfortable livelihood.
They did very well in Persia. The Jews were doing very well there. They were very successful. They were very loyal to the government. They were a part of the army. They were generals in the army. Well, as you learn in a minute, Mordechai was a general in the army of Ahasuerus. Okay, continue.
As time went on, for business reasons and through their business contacts, they lost touch with their life of Torah and mitzvot, merged into the surrounding culture, and sought luxury. They forgot that they were the chosen nation. They took lightly the fact that God chose us from all the nations and elevated us above every language, and began to live an unbridled and carefree life like the nations around them.
You see, in countries that the society was low level, low class, Jews did not try to assimilate because they didn't want to be like the locals. But in societies where the Jews looked up to these people, like in Germany, America, in Russia, in certain places, they wanted to be like them. They tried to, well, I don't want to look like with the mitzvahs, with the Jewish things, to be embarrassed that I'm different. I want to be like everybody else. And especially they are the successful people, they are the people who make it in life, they are the fashion, they are this, they are... And that's what is going on there. They did very well, they did well financially, and they became a part of the elite of the society. And the idea that we are different is something that's doesn't make me feel comfortable, as they say in America. Doesn't make me feel comfortable. Then I become very comfortable with myself and become like everybody else. Mordechai the Jew.
Mordechai the Jew and the prophet Malachi warned them that God would not tolerate this lifestyle.
Yeah, but go ahead.
Question. I mean, just in general, when we reading about Purim or some other events like that for the history and everything, it's talking about the Jews, the whole Jews. Like, is it like these Jews were living in Persia?
Mm-hmm.
Where are other Jews?
Most of the Jews are in Persia. Some of the Jews were in Babylon, and the Persia became took over Babylon as they conquered the Babylonians. The Persian culture became the culture of the world. They became the superpower.
But question is like, is it just in generally some other Jews were somewhere else? Or the, most Jews?
Most of the Jews. There were Jews in other places. For sure there were Jews in other places. But you talk about Persia because Persia was the place where the whole miracle, the story of Purim took place. There were Jews in other places. But he was the superpower. Basically, if he decided to annihilate the Jews, then there is no future for the Jewish people. But for sure, not everybody became like this. But that was the trend. The trend, the direction was this. That was the direction. What do you wanted to say?
At the time, this time, Persia was sort of probably the largest empire ever existed. The Jewish population, somewhere about 1 million+ people in the land of the Persian Empire.
No, I know that from that perspective history. I'm talking about like the Jews were like moving all of them in one place. It looked like at least when we're reading this, you see, like they were somewhere else, then they were in a place, and now they're all like all or most of them. But again, most of them like 60% or 95%.
It's like just like after World War II, the Jews moved to America, right? They started to move after World War I, but the trend was towards America. Every Jew, what was his dream? America is going to Chicago, right? If he lowered the roof, everybody's going to Chicago.
Everybody has to know our business.
Exactly. Then that was the direction. That was the trend. Obviously not everybody. Obviously not. But that was the trend. And when you see on the trend, that's dangerous because that's where it's going. Assimilation in Persia. Life is good. Let's run to Persia. There's a land of opportunity was Persia. We'll dig the gold. We'll find the gold. Tells his bride, let's go to America, right? At the same time, happened again and again. It's not like normal.
Yeah.
Exactly. Okay, please.
Jewish assimilation to Persian culture, source 2. Esther 1:5-11. When these days were over, the king made for all the people present in Shushan, the capital, for everyone, both great and small, a banquet for 7 days in the courtyard of the garden of the king's orchard. There were spreads of white, fine cotton, and blue embroidered with cords of linen and purple on silver rods and marble columns. Couches of gold and silver on a pavement of green, white, shell, and onyx marble.
Would you like to be invited to such a party? Tell me.
Sure, everybody.
Everybody wanted to be invited. The party was, he won the war. It was a big war. He won the war, and he treated the whole nation to a big party. The Jews were generals. Mordechai was a general. The Jews are invited to the party. Who is not going to this party? Everybody's going, right?
Haman's a
general. Sure, everybody's going to the party. Mordechai was a general. He wasn't a schlepper. Okay, continue.
They gave them to drink in golden vessels, and the vessels differed from one another, and royal wine was plentiful, as fitting for a king. The drinking was according to the law with no one coercing, where the king ordered every steward of his house to do according to every man's will.
Everybody's was respected. You want kosher wine? Here is kosher wine. You want this? Everyone was treated the way he wanted. No? You drink wine? What happens? Okay, continue.
Vashti the queen made a banquet for the women in the royal house of King Ahasuerus. On the seventh day, when the king's heart was merry with wine, he ordered Mehuman, Bezeta, Charvona, Begata, and Avagata, Zetar, and Charkas, the seven chamberlains who served King Ahasuerus, to bring Vashti the queen before the king with the royal crown, to show the people and the nobles her beauty, she was beautiful.
That's a story in the Megillah. We all know he said to bring Vashti. Every child in preschool knows it. But why suddenly they want? What was beyond this? The Meshugais of bringing Vashti to show her off. Here the, what the Gemara says. Source 2a, Medrash Rabbe. I mean, from the Medrash. Go ahead.
Some said the women of Midia are the most beautiful, and others said the Persian women are the most beautiful. Ahasuerus, the fool, said, the object I use is neither Midian nor Persian. She is a Castite.
Mm-hmm.
Would you like to see it? Yes, they responded. But she must be naked. Of course, Ahasuerus answered. She will be naked.
All right. That was a very intelligent, high-class conversation. Who is more beautiful? And there was a beauty contest in them 1 minute, and she has to show up naked. She didn't want to come naked.
What is Castite? I mean, is
it... Chaldean. I don't know why they said Castite. They should be Chaldean. But she was Chaldean. The Chaldean, no, there were. I think it's Chaldean. I think they were the Christian. There is Chaldean in Detroit. They were Christian Iraqis.
Iraqi.
Yes. Christian Iraqis. They were actually the one who destroyed the first temple. Actually, the Chaldean. But.
It's like the land.
What?
Where the land is? Where the land?
In Iraq.
Part of Iraq?
Yeah, part of Iraq. I cannot tell you where exactly, but actually my brother used to get for the high holidays an empty store from a Chaldean for the high holidays. He supported them and he helped them. I mean, that's how I learned the word that the Chaldean exists. I didn't know that it existed.
Is it still there, to like that area? That
I don't know. I think so. I think there is something there. Yeah. Okay, in any case... That's where it's going, the party, when people start to drink and go crazy. Continue.
Were they, just this objectifying women naked? That was like the whole culture, or was it just because they were all drunk?
No, that was a culture for the question.
They were using the word objectifying them. You
know? he said, the object I use.
Yeah, we learned that Vashti threw a party.
They were not in 2024, so not even 2020. The world was... Sure, it was. That was the culture and the behavior.
Yeah, Sivashi made a party in the king's house because she wanted men there so she could
exploit
them.
No, I mean to say that was the non-Jewish world. That was normal. In Judaism, we say that's not allowed and you have to behave in a different way. But if you have no religion and no God and no nothing, that's exactly what is happening.
It's still like that today.
Yes,
it's no different today.
Esther was that way too then when she became...
No, Esther was not that way. This even Vashti did not want to become... Why did they kill Vashti? She didn't want to show up naked. That's why she was killed. First of all, Esther, certain things she had to do because she had no choice. Esther was not becoming a queen because she wanted. It wasn't a beauty contest that Mordechai sent Esther to be a part of number one. It was a beauty contest, but they took the girls unwillingly. Esther did not want to be a queen. Esther was forced into it. And it's written in the Megillah a few times. Hidden in the Megillah. I couldn't write it clearly because the Megillah was written during the time of the king. They couldn't write in the Megillah that you forced her to be your wife. But there was it's entered in the Megillah in a few places. Okay, continue.
Ahasuerus had conquered many countries, and his Jewish citizens, having contributed to his war efforts, were rewarded monetarily as well as the expression of gratitude and by government.
Oh, they became big machers in the kingdom.
On his victorious return from a major battle, Ahasuerus hosted mammoth feasts for all of his citizens. The Jews, too, were invited by the organizing committee, who had been instructed to provide every guest with the menu and the liquor that he had ordered. These feasts of non-kosher delicacies with a wild debauchery. Vulgarized the Jews even more.
Debauchery, what is this word?
It's like prostitution, lewd, drinking.
Having fun.
Yeah.
A good party. Yeah.
Las Vegas.
Actually, they use the word like at the base of Mount Sinai when the Jews were going crazy. Yeah, like that's what, yeah.
Yeah, that's the same story.
Some rock and roller says sex, drugs, and rock and roll or something.
Yeah.
Okay, that's a good combination.
I think that was Mick Jagger.
The Jews became intoxicated by their wartime
earnings. Mm-hmm. You don't go
ahead. And by the king's letters of gratitude, they lived in the biggest and fanciest palaces and enjoyed their free life without Shabbat, kosher, mikvah, tefillin, etc.
They became intoxicated not from the wine, from the excitement, from the power, from the achievements, from being like everybody else, being a part of the leadership of the country. We finally made it. Ah, what a great achievement. Yeah. That was exciting. It was exciting, very exciting. Go ahead, continue.
Ivri versus Yehudi, source 3. There was Yehudi, Judean man, in Shushan, the capital, whose name was Mordecai, the son of Yair, the son of Shimi, and the son of Kish, a Benjaminite.
The first time in the Bible that we meet the name Yehudi, Jew, is in the story of the Megillah. Until the story of the Megillah, there was no such thing as Yehudi, as Jew. What was the name of the Jewish people before?
Israelites.
Before Israelites?
Hebrews.
Hebrews. That was the name. Abraham was an Hebrew, right? Mm-hmm. He came from a place that's called Ever. That's number one, Ivri. And also, the Talmud says he was on one side, Me'ever means on the other side of the river, so to speak. He was on one side and the whole world was against him. Then he was Hebrews. And the Jewish people carried the name Hebrew for many generations. Still, in Russian, we are called Ivrei.
That's what we're just talking about. Ivrei, it sounds like Ivrei.
Ivrei, yeah. Ivrei comes from the word Hebrew. Then what suddenly we changed the name in Jewish? In Persian is also, what's the name?
We call ourselves
Ivrei.
So do they don't like...
That's in Persian language or in Hebrew?
Is
Yehudi. Oh.
So as a group, you don't say, like, how would you say yourself?
I think in Italian, there is a few languages that still the name is Hebrews.
That's come from Hebrew language.
Hebrews. I think in Portuguese, there is quite a few languages that the name is until today Hebrew. Then the question is, why changing? Jews don't like changing things. Actually, Jews really don't like to change things. Every time there is a change in Jewish tradition, we have very, very strong reason for this change. Usually, it was a problem of assimilation, and to fight assimilation, we went out of our way to change it.
So, I just want to ask a question. So in Russia and Iran, do they still use Ivri?
In Russian, in the passport was written Ivrei.
It's like with nationality.
Yeah.
We all initiated from Megillah. We all call ourselves descendants of 2,700 years in Persia. That's what I know. We've been living around in the Persian Empire.
Okay.
Around all
about. You're right.
That's what we are.
Right.
But you see, Danny, you said it sounds like Hebrew. You're thinking it's from Hebrew, how we name it.
Same
but
word. Hebrew
no.
And Hebrew is the same
no.
Word.
No. You like, called yourself Hebrew. Yeah. Not the Persian called you Hebrew.
No, they're called Yehudi.
Okay. He says the Russians call them Ivrei's. That's what it says. That's the difference. And there is a few other countries today that in their language they call the Jews Hebrews.
Hebrew is a language.
Please.
Is it anything else?
What?
Is it anything else?
It's a nationality. We were Hebrews. Before we got the name Jews, our name was Hebrews.
Mm-hmm.
Abraham was a
first. Individuals who didn't necessarily speak Hebrew. Would that be right?
What do you mean?
Did Hebrew at one point encompass individuals that spoke a variety of languages?
Absolutely.
What
is the air conditioning? What's going on here?
Yeah. It's really windy outside.
It's from outside, you think? Yeah. I don't think so. Not from outside.
You think it's blowing in the vents?
Can you see if it's... I think it's blowing in. Turn on the heat maybe a little bit. In any case, no, but I'll tell you.
250 years ago, as the Brits called them the English. That was their language, but also their...
Yeah.
I was trying to...
I'll tell you. When the first Hebrew was Abraham, he also taught his children, grandchildren, the language of Hebrew. Now, after years, when we went to Egypt, most of us spoke Hebrew, but not everybody. Later, when the Jews went to other countries, they spoke other languages, but they were still called Hebrews. It was a Hebrew who speaks Aramaic, a Hebrew who speaks other languages, but a Hebrew is an Hebrew. It's like you can, like you're a Jew who speaks English, but you're still a Jew. A Hebrew was not a language. The Hebrew, the language is named after the people. The Hebrew are the people, and then the language comes. That's what it was.
That was the tribe, or what became the tribe.
The nation was Igbo.
Yeah.
Tribe, we were more than a tribe, we were a nation, yeah.
Right, because it was a compilation of the tribes as opposed to the other Semitic tribes and groups that were separated by language and things, yeah.
I mean, in general, what makes a nation, usually? And the place, the land, the language, and the culture. You're an American because you live in America, because you speak English, and because you celebrate Thanksgiving. Hmm. The Jewish people, that's not what makes them into a nation. They're a nation because of the Torah, because they all speak different languages. The Hebrews in Russia speak Russian. The people in America speak English. People in Israel speak Hebrew. And other language, and their culture is not the same culture. They eat falafel in Israel. We eat pizzas, and everybody eats other things. And some people eat gefilte fish. And also the land. We are not in the same land. Then we are a unique nation that our identity is Judaism. Is the religion. Is the Torah. And therefore, every time when we wanted to be like the people who are in this country, when you ask a person, what you are first, an American or a Jew? That's the question. That's the ultimate question. The question is even in Israel, you're an Israeli or Jewish, what are you first? That's the same question. What are you? You're trying to be a Persian and become a part of Ahasuerus?
No, what nationality are you? What religion are you?
It should be this one and the same, right?
Yeah. If Jews, it should be one and the same. It should, right,
yeah.
That's the answer.
Right,
so
that's what...
But it's not.
It should be.
Yeah, right. It should be, though. Hmm.
Continue to read. Yeah, this issue will be clarified more and more as we read.
The term that properly describes Jewish name is Ivri, Hebrew. Thus we read, the survivor came and told Abraham the Ivri, and that is how Jews define themselves from that time on.
Yeah, for me, Abraham, we are called Hebrews.
The name Ivri indicates that the Jewish people are descendants of Abraham. Abraham requires no introduction. He was the first to make mankind aware of the name of God, who created the world and directs it by specific divine providence and taught mankind how to serve him. He pursued this holy mission undaunted by physical danger. The title Ivri is the Jewish people's crown of a good name. It signifies the innate self-sacrifice, Mizrut Nefesh, of Jewish men and women, young and old, the observance of the God-given Torah and its mitzvot.
See, for years, Hebrew was, you're a child of Abraham. What was Abraham ready to sacrifice his son for his religion? The whole world was against him. And everybody wanted to kill him and to destroy him. Then a Hebrew means somebody who is ready to give his life for his religion.
That observance of Torah, in defiance of danger in all countries and throughout all the generations until it weakened in the time of the king of Judea and Israel.
Oh, that came when it started to change. In Israel, the kingdom of... See, King David created the kingdom of Israel. I mean, it became one kingdom by Saul and then David. Then Solomon made it into a strong kingdom, built the first temple. After Solomon died, the kingdom was divided into two kingdoms, the kingdom of Judah and the kingdom of Israel, the 10 tribes and the 2 tribes. The kingdom of Judah was made up of Judeans and people from Benjaminites, and Kohens and Levites. Basically, 3 tribes. The kingdom of Israel was 10 tribes. The kingdom of Israel was not a religious kingdom. They established two golden calf, one in Bethel and the other one in Dan, in the northern, in the, I mean, two separate sites of the countries, two centers, and the Jews started to worship idols. And little by little, they started to assimilate to like everybody else. That's where the beginning of the assimilation started. Okay.
It sounds like such a foreign concept. Like, we'd never walk in here and see like some statue that we would pray to.
Yeah,
like,
no,
even
no.
After Mount Sinai and all of that, like, it's got to be such a foreign concept. Like,
that they were so close in time to all the miracles and the sacrifices and all this and the prophets, like, and they did this. Yet we're thousands and thousands of years out, and we don't, like Kevin says, we don't.
We live in a society where people don't bow to idols. They lived in, at the time when everyone bowed to idols. They just, it was the religion of the nations around them.
Yeah,
that's the difference.
That's the difference. It's not, we are. I want to pat myself on the shoulder and say that I'm great. And we are great in many ways. But the main thing is, you say it's a foreign concept. Yeah. But at that time was the in thing to do. What is today the in thing to do? To have a cell phone and to have a race cars. And that's the idol, right?
And it's TikTok.
And TikTok, everybody's meshuggah about TikTok. And everybody's today is to be woke. And I don't know all the other mishigais that goes on in the world, and everybody thinks it's the biggest chochem on earth. At that time, worshipping idols was the normal thing to do. Everybody wanted to do it. And when everybody wants to do it, and you have to stop yourself, then it doesn't make a difference what it is. If society wants to do it, it takes a lot of control not to be a part of society. To be different takes a lot of backbone. And that was the problem in every time when Jews were in a different culture. The kids, the young people, want to do what everybody else is doing. They're all doing this. Everybody has a cell phone and is 2 years old. Everybody's doing. And your kids want to do it. They want to dress like everybody else. They want to wear. They want to go to the same sports and all the sports events. Now sports became a religion. Even school, Sunday school is nothing. Sport comes first. Hmm. And everybody was weekends. They go with the kids to this place, to that place. Cost thousands and thousands of dollars. Everybody running around from one place to another. That became the religion. It's all about what everybody else is doing. To stand up and having a backbone, this means to be Jewish. And it's very easy not to. Continue.
At that time, the healthy thousand-year-old Ivri began.
The healthy. Go ahead.
Present a change. Phase. To a certain extent, the Torah and Mitzvot Ivri received political soil and was recognized as an independent nation. From the first day, ever since the descendants of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob were crowned with the title Ivri, they were the people of God.
Suddenly, I think what didn't mean necessarily a man who connected to Judaism, to the Torah, an Ivri became a nationality. There is a Chinese, there is Ivri. And nothing to do with the religion. Okay, you want to continue, Nani? Yeah.
What's the time frame from leaving Egypt, being in the desert, getting the Ten Commandments, and this?
800 years.
A thousand years. Less than 1,000 years. It's like
800 years.
A little over
1,000 years ago was time of Sacharsperosh, and this is
300 years ago. Was it?
So all the Jews were in Egypt or in. Had gone into Israel, and then
now they are little by little.
Now, all of a sudden, they
were exiled.
First of all,
they were exiled, but even before exiled, people moved for business opportunities. So this, you know, people start to spread, and the more you spread among other nations, then you lose your identity. It's very easy to lose your identity. It's like in America, people lived in very small towns. There were two Jewish families. What do you want to should happen to the children? If you don't live in a strong Jewish community with a lot of Jews, that's what's going to happen.
It's interesting that that was the Jewish culture, and then all of a sudden.
And Jews, wherever they go, they are the best, and they want to achieve the highest jobs, and they want to do the better than everybody else, then that's what is happening. The whole world.
The whole world, even Amalek. Knew that the Jews and seed of Abraham were the chosen people. The phrase means the people of Hashem. However, when the political Ivri came into being, he proclaimed to the world that he was its nation and it secured the support of the political experts who first of all neglected the Torah view in a general and partially exchanged the Torah and its mitzvot for alternative ideologies. In this way, two things of Ivri came into being. Torah and Mitzvot, Ivri and political Ivri.
Two types of Hebrews. I don't know why you use the word Ivri instead of Hebrew, the English word. There became two types of Hebrews. The religious Hebrew and the non-religious Hebrew. The Israeli and the Jew. The American and the Jew. With American feels, then he's a Jew, then he's a Judah. Basically, it does mean if an Hebrew means you're religious, no. I can be an Hebrew and not be religious and not believe in God and worship idols. Why not? Who is to stop me? What I'm an Hebrew, but I'm not. I don't believe in this garbage. I don't need this.
Yeah, but if you call yourself a Jew, you believe in God. You believe there's one God. Like you can't call yourself a Jew, and you can't have it both ways. To your benefit. I mean,
But politically, that's what they're.
To gain, but you really can't.
That's the two times.
Young man, you say something. We'll get to it. Yeah. We can now
understand why the prophet Jonah did not identify himself by saying that simply Ivri and
Anochi. I'm a Ivri. Let's stop for a second here. There's a story with Jonah. We read about Jonah in the story of Yom Kippur. Jonah in the whale. Right? He was on the boat and started a strong storm. And they woke him up. He was sleeping in the storm. Woke him up. They told him, "Who are you? From which nation are you? From which religion are you?" He says, "Ivri Anochi, I'm an Hebrew." But then he added another line. "And I'm a God-fearing man. I fear the God of the heavens." Why he needed to say, "I'm God of fear of the heavens"? Because at that time, to say I'm a Nibu was not enough. I am a Nibu, so still who is your God? That's where it changed. There was the difference. The here you seen the Bible, where to say I'm a Nibu was not enough anymore.
Creating Orthodox.
Huh?
Orthodox.
Is a modern Orthodox? Is that what it is?
Go ahead, continue. I'm sorry.
Okay. I am an Ivri. I stand with, it says Anochi, Ivri Anochi. I am an Ivri. But specified, I am an Ivri and I stand in awe of Hashem in heaven. Jonah 1:19. Because in his time, there already existed two kinds of Ivri. The genuine Ivri of and the and counterfeit Ivri. Jonah therefore added that he was God fearing, and thereby clarifying that he belonged to the genuine Ivri.
Yeah, he had to say I'm an Ibu from this Ibus. Because to say I'm an Ibu meant nothing anymore. And that's how it came that later by the story of the Megillah to say Ibu was not didn't mean anything. Go ahead. Right? Do we all know the story that everybody bowed to Haman and beside one guy, Mordechai? Continue.
Then the king's servants who were in the king's gate said to Mordechai, "Why do you disobey the king's orders?
Why are you not like all the other Jews? They all bow down to Haman. Why not you? What are you making your troubles? Why you make us look bad?" That's what they really said. Why is Israel bringing on us anti-Semitism? Israel is the cause for our tzores. Mordechai was the cause of the tzores of the Jews. That was the problem. The Jews were angry with Mordechai. Not only the servants of the... Go ahead, continue.
They said this to him daily, and he did not heed them. They told this to Haman to see whether Mordechai's words would stand. He had told them that he was a Jew.
Oh, he told them that he was a Jew. So, go ahead.
When Haman saw that Mordechai would neither kneel nor bow before him, he became full of wrath. But it seemed contemptible to him to lay hands on Mordechai alone. For they had told him Mordechai's nationality, so Haman sought to destroy all the Jews who were throughout Hashverosh's entire kingdom. Mordechai's people.
See, what happened is, They told him Mordechai doesn't want to bow. Then kill Mordechai. Why he wants to kill everybody? Everybody else was bowed down to him. What do you want? What's the problem? Why you got angry with the people of Mordechai?
Yeah, he was a visionary. He was channeling someone else eventually.
Continue.
One of the royal advisors, Haman, many acquaintances among the political elite. They spent time eating and drinking together, and there were no points of conflict between them. Their Jewish roots were unnoticeable, and they too kneeled and prostrated themselves before that day.
Haman had a lot of Jewish friends, a lot of guys who were friends with him. They went to all his parties, they bowed down to him, that no problem. Continue, Haman.
Haman could not understand why Mordechai was different from the other Greeks. After all, he too was a political figure, an extraordinarily proficient linguist who met the highest government officials. So why was he so different from the other
ones? Yeah, why is it different, this Mordechai? What do you want? Continue.
That clearly lasted only until his underling explained to him that Mordechai was Jewish, as distinct from an Ivri. They explained that Ivri was a political term that could include someone who opposed the Jewish religion or even belonged to a different faith. An identifying name can exist even in someone's imagination. For example, a person might assume a subjective identity as if he belonged to a certain country and a certain nation, regardless of his actual religion or lineage. The name Yehudi, they explain, describes a genuine Jew who believes in God and faithfully and energetically observes his Torah and his mitzvot to the point of self-sacrifice. It was at that point that Haman's gross and cruel heart sought to destroy, kill, and annihilate all the Yehudim.
Because Haman, when he understood that Mordechai is a Jew, not just a Hebrew, not just from a nationality that they call themselves Hebrew, but he really understood that all of them, deep down, they're Jews. They might try to become Hebrews and assimilate and everything, but the constant Semites, they don't care how religious you are. They don't care what you, if you're right wing or left wing, if you're on their side, on the other side, when they hate Jews, they hate everybody. And that's what really happened there. He got angry by Mordechai, the religious Jew, didn't want to bow down to him. But very quick, he said, we have to get rid of all of them. Because deep down, they all agree with him. They might not ready to do it, but then when you push them to the wall, they are really all like Mordechai. That's what Haman understood better than the Jews themselves understood. Okay, Haman calls blood. Go ahead.
Haman said to King Ahasuerus, there are certain people who gather and separate among the peoples throughout all the provinces of your kingdom. And their laws differ from everyone else's laws. And they don't keep the king's laws. Therefore, of no use for the kings to let them be. It pleases the king, let it be written to destroy them. And I will weigh out 10,000 silver pieces into the hands of those who perform the work to bring it into the king's treasuries. The king took his ring off his hand and gave it to Haman, the son of Hammedata, the Agagite, the adversary of the Jews.
That came the law. He said, let's kill all the Jews. He came to Ahasuerus, and Ahasuerus agreed right away.
They don't keep the king's laws. They are idle to the entire year. Every day they say, today is Sabbath, today is Passover.
One of the arguments was the Jews never walk. Every day is another Yontev, another party. It's Shabbos, it's Rosh Hashanah, it's Pesach, it's this. Nobody walks. The excuse that they were the most productive citizens in Persia. But what they were accused of? For not doing anything. Always upside down completely.
They don't pay taxes and dues.
Ah, you see, they don't pay taxes. There was another lie. Go ahead.
What was the fire at his disposal? Haman launched an extermination campaign against the Yehudim, Mordechai's people, against the Shabbat observers. He convinced Ahasuerus that they were unproductive and lax in their civic duties because they were forever claiming that today's Shabbat, today's Pesach. Knowing the power of his wealth, he offered
Ahasuerus, yeah. 10,000 silver talents in exchange for the bunch of Jews that were scattered throughout the kingdom.
He basically said they're scattered all around all your kingdom. They don't do what you do, what the regular people do. They don't observe the regular holidays. They don't observe Christmas. They observe Rosh Hashanah. They are different. They have other holidays. They are not productive. They don't pay taxes. Let's get rid of them. I'll give you 10,000 talents. You know, money. Money talks. And let's get rid of the Jews.
And how many Jews were there like at that time?
I don't know exactly, but what are
the million? It's very, very varied numbers, but there was quite a few, in all scattered all over Middle East and part of all the way to Germany.
And the Ahasuerus was in charge of everything.
So how, like, what did that region look like? Like, how big was that?
You go
physical land.
Mongolia from one end all the way to near Spain on the other end. All over the Middle East.
It was big. It was the whole world.
Huge territory.
Yeah.
All over.
And it was all the Persians were controlling everything.
They had 101 nations. It's known that they have 101 nations. King Cyrus the Great ruled over 101 nations.
The Megillah says 127 nations, but yeah, now I see it.
So the plan was to go from Mongolia to Spain and wipe out all the Jews.
No, he didn't have to go anywhere. Everyone kills his neighbor, his Jewish neighbor.
That area.
Don't have to walk out. You don't have to send soldiers. The soldiers are there. Okay.
You just get the money, right?
Exactly.
You get the house, get the money.
Exactly.
Even if Haman distinguished between Avri and Ehudi, his son and followers made no such distinctions. They hated the oppressed and oppressed the Ephraim exactly as they hated and oppressed the Ephraim. They were shown the door and disgracefully driven out of their high position.
They throw out the Hebrews, the non-observant Jews, the non-identified people who identify themselves not as Jews. They still, from Haman's point of view, it was no different. They throw all of them out from the offices, from the high positions. They got rid of everybody. Just like it happened in Germany. Nobody cared who you are, if you're religious or not. Every Jew was hated in torn out. And in October 7, exactly. You don't have to go to Germany.
They were robbed of their capital, their gold, silver, and jewelry, spat on and thrown out of their mansions. And bereft of all their property. In a word, they were reminded of their long forgotten and suppressed lineage. There was no wave of intense suffering for all the descendants of Abraham, Ephraim, and Ephraim alike.
Suddenly they were reminded that they are Jews, that nothing will help them. You cannot run away from your identity, no matter what's going on.
Mordechai leads a spiritual awakening. Esther ordered to reply to Mordechai, "Go assemble all the Jews who are present in Shushan and fast on my behalf, and do not eat or drink for 3 days, day and night. I and my maidens will fast likewise. Then I will go to the king contrary to the law, and if I perish, I perish."
Mm-hmm.
At that critical time, Mordechai focused all his efforts on education. In Shushan, the capital city alone, he gathered 22,000 children who studied Torah and observed mitzvot at the risk of their lives, thereby demonstrating their pride in being Yehudim. In fact, all the Yehudim, men and women, old and young, the more learned and the less learned, were armed with this sense of mesirut nefesh, self-sacrifice. They all, without exception, were prepared to allow themselves to be slaughtered or burnt for the observance of the mitzvot of Shabbat, kosher, family purity, and tefillin. As proud Jews, they scoffed at Haman's followers and religious oppressors. All in all, the spiritual state of the Jews in Shushan, and likewise throughout the 127 provinces, was lit up by that flame of self-sacrifice.
And that's what happened as a reaction to this. They're being thrown out and want to be annihilated. The Jews woke up, went back to their roots, and remembered who they are, that nothing will help them, no matter how much you assimilate, and you have money, and you have power, and you have connections, nothing will help you in a rainy day, so to speak. It's all about, we are all the same. And that's what caused a huge awakening for the Jewish people to to become closer to Judaism.
How many times do you have to go through this as a people to realize?
As many times as we forget. That's how many times.
Until you learn.
I mean,
you never
learn. How many times?
Days from the time that they got the Torah and how many times they started building the calf? It's not like
I'll tell you, assimilation is very tempting. Very, very tempting.
It's easy.
It's powerful. It's exciting. It looks very glorious. Very.
But you gotta have some guts, like at some point.
Guts. What else you want? Guts.
It's profitable. But then you're not gonna have.
It is profitable.
Then you won't have your neighbors as friends.
That's right.
Yeah.
I think the keyword is easy. You know.
Sure, it's easy.
This is the main thing why people.
But it's more than easy. What I mean to say, it's very tempting. No. That's what I'm saying. It's very exciting to be a part of the elite and have a good life, an easy life, and being invited to all the glitzy parties.
But it's easy. I think it's mostly on the parents' side not to do anything, making sure the kids are kind of just going to the right direction. Because concept of let them be happy and whatever, doesn't matter what they do.
As long as they are happy.
Or don't do, yeah, and healthy, yeah, that's kind of together with it. That's easy part.
Yeah, I know the excuse. As long as I want them to be happy. You know, Miriam tells me then when the kids, yes, preschool mothers, what do you want your kids to be happy? By the bar mitzvah, nobody says, I want my kids to be happy. Happy. Should be a mensch. Be happy. Nothing makes them happy. Okay, go ahead.
Relevance to World War II.
This was said, this talk of the previous Lubavitcher Rebbe was said in 1941. And it was relevant to what was happening in Germany in the world.
Concerning the miracle of Purim.
Page 11.
Concerning the miracle of Purim, the Megillah writes, these days are recalled and observed in every generation, every family, every province, every town. These days of Purim will not vanish from among the Jews, nor will the memory of them perish from their descendants. There is no need to explain these words. Everyone clearly understands what they say. It is important, however, to note that for the Purim miracle to take place, there must be Yehudim, Jews, with a Mezirat Nefesh for the Torah and the Mitzvot. What the world is now going through should remind us Jews of the era of Haman. It is now being recycled and even refreshed. In all countries, Jews are in an ocean of woes. The Jews overseas are in the midst of a conflagration. We are outside the fire. Many positive things are being done to help our brothers overseas, and people are giving tzedakah. But that isn't all that has to be done. The main thing to do is teshuva, repentance.
Yeah, that's how the name change, Ibri changed to the name Yehudi from Hebrew to a Jew, because the Jew was the sign of the Jew who is committed, and all they became Jews. By the story of the Megillah, what really happened? Now all the Hebrews became Jews. They understood it's all about the identity, the connection to Judaism.
Jews must not despair, even in the face of the greatest danger. Even in the present, extraordinarily dire situation, Jews must be steadfast in their hope and trust in God. On no account should we rely only on physical weaponry and mortal strength. May God lend strength to those who are defending the cause of what is right, and we ought to help them by whatever means we can. At the same time, however, we Jews must use our eternal, dependable, and divinely promised weapon, if you walk in my ways. That is teshuvah, repentance. In plain words, this means observing Shabbat, kosher, family purity, tefillin, and the mitzvot in general.
Basically being a Jew, no way to run away from it.
Jews must not despair.
Yeah, but you're not giving up. This was said in 1941 by the previous Rebbe, by the father-in-law. His son-in-law, the Rebbe, in 1971, went back to the same concept of Jews and Hebrews and Jews. And he explained it in a little bit on a deeper level. Go ahead.
Who was a Jew?
Go ahead.
The Rebbe. That's true. The Megillah refers to the children of Israel with the unusual term Yehudim. This is most prominent with regard to Mordechai. There was a Yehudi, Judean man in Shushan, the capital, whose name was Mordechai, a Benjaminite. Although Mordechai was from the tribe of Benjamin, he is still referred to as Yehudi, even though the simple meaning of that term is a member of the tribe of Judah. The same is true of all the Yehudim in all of the king
Ahasuerus' countries. Ahasuerus ruled the entire world at that time, so his kingdom certainly included members of all of the 12 tribes of Israel. Nevertheless, the Jews are consistently referred to specifically as Yehudim Judeans. This can't be attributed to the fact that King Sennacherib had earlier mixed the entire world, so people were no longer aware of which tribe they descended from.
There is a story, there is a in the Bible about the King Sennacherib, the Assyrian king. Before the Babylonians conquered the world, the Sennacherib, the Assyrians, they conquered the world. And they had a philosophy, a policy, when they move people from their places. Let's say the people from New York will be moved to Cleveland, the people in Cleveland move to New York. In such a way, nobody will be able to claim that the land is his land. It was a way to control everybody. Then he came and really mixed up the nations. We don't know who is an Amalekite and who is a Moabite and who is this. Then you can say also we didn't know which tribe is, who is the tribe of Judah and who is the tribe of Benjamin and who is the tribe. But the Rebbe says the Jews still knew which tribe they are. Why is it? But they still, even that they knew that the tribe from Dan or the tribe from Benjamin, they still call themselves Jews. Continue.
The books of Ezra and Nehemiah related that there were a number of Jews who brought detailed genealogical charts tracing their tribal ancestry. There were also Kohanim and Levites who know until today that they belong to the tribe of Levi.
Yeah, nevertheless.
Nevertheless, everyone is referred to as
Yehudim. Obviously, it became a general name even for the Jews who were from different tribes. Here is a Kohen. He knows this. A Kohen is from the tribe of Levi. It's not from the tribe of Judah. We call him Yehudi. You see, Yehudi comes from the name Jew. Judah, from Judah. But everybody has the name Judah. Even I'm not from the tribe of Judah. I don't know from which tribe, but maybe I'm a Benjaminite. Maybe I'm from nowhere. I don't know. But I love Jew, exactly.
The explanation for this can be found in the Talmud's teaching. Anyone who denies idolatry is called a Yehudi, literally acknowledger.
Thus, remember what you said before?
Yeah.
What means to be a Jew? The Rebbe went to the lowest common denominator. What means a Jew? A Jew is somebody who denies idol worshiping. You don't have to be a big rabbi. You don't have to grow a beard until you're on a stomach. A Jew is anybody who denies idolatry. He admits, Yehudi comes to the word to admit. He admits that God is the true God and he doesn't worship idols. Then this includes every one of us. Like you said before, what if he's a Jew? What is he believing in, right? How could he worship idols? Exactly this.
So that, like, in, I mean, in theory, if you're Jewish, you don't believe that. You don't doubt
it. Yeah, absolutely.
You draw the line for the idol worship or not idol worship, that's always...
Exactly. Then we are... In the beginning, you think a Jew, when the previous Rebbe is trying to tell that everybody should do tshuva, he wants to elevate everybody. But the Rebbe takes it to the other direction. As long as you deny idols, you're already a part of the tribe. You don't have to be a big tzaddik.
Thus, the name Yehudi doesn't denote descent from the tribe of Judah. Rather, all Jews, including the Benjaminites, Kohanim, Levites, and all the rest, are, quote, Yehudim, and on account of their denial of idolatry.
Exactly. Okay, you want to continue, Phil?
Verse 8. Mordechai is referred to as a Jew, Yehudi, apparently indicating that he came from the tribe of Judah. But in the continuation of the verse, he is called Benjamite, Yemini, which includes that he came from the tribe of Benjamin. Rabbi Nachman said, Mordechai was crowned with honorary names. Yehudi is one such honorary title due to its allusion to the royal tribe of Judah, but it is not referring to Mordechai's tribal affiliation. Rabbi Yochanan said that a different explanation of the verse. Actually, Mordechai came from the tribe of Benjamin. Why, then, was he referred to as a Yehudi? On account of the fact that he repudiated idol worship. For anyone who repudiates idol worship, idolatry is called Yehudi.
Anybody who denies idol worshiping is a Jew. Finished. Continue.
The Rebbe.
Okay, go ahead.
The Rebbe, when forced to choose, Jesus always died. Every Jew, irrespective of their position and status, automatically recoils whenever he hears something adulterous and repudiates it. The altar Rebbe, the founder of Chabad, explains to her, "Hear, O Israel, the Lord is our God, the Lord is one," that a Jew neither desires nor is capable of being disconnected from God. The only reason it is possible for a Jew to commit any transgression is because he thinks that this particular transgression doesn't affect his Jewishness. But when adultery is at stake, this mistake is impossible. So the response is
that means something very interesting. A Jew, he speaks a little bit gossip. No, it makes him not Jewish. He's doing a little thing. It makes him not Jewish. He's still Jewish. But when you put him, you push him to the wall, and you tell him, you tell him something that he knows that this is cutting his ties with Judaism, he will never do it. Jews had nothing to do with Judaism. When they were forced to choose between converting to another religion or to give their lives, many, many Jews in Jewish history chose to die and not to convert to another religion. That for a religious person who is doing it, it's not a big achievement. But for a Jew, he's a secular Jew and calls himself, just I'm an American more than a Jew. I'm a this more than a Jew. And he, when you push comes to shove and you tell him, here it is. You have to make a statement that you're not Jewish. He's not ready to do it. It's beyond logic. It doesn't have any explanation why it's doing it. But this is a fact. It was so many times. Not every time a Jew did it, but many, many times Jews who had no connection to Judaism, but that they felt, then you know, there is a, what is the name of the guy, the reporter who was beheaded?
Daniel Pearl.
He said a minute before, "I'm a Jew, and I will," something like this, "and I will die as a Jew," something like this. And he did, a second before they did it to him, he didn't give up on his religion. And he comes from a very secular family. And what does this mean? And I saw stories like this. There is countless stories like this. There were kibbutz guys who many, many years ago, like 25 years ago, they were challenged, they were taken hostages in some fong in the Far East. And he said, if they will force us to convert to Islam, we will die and not do it. That's what he told later. And you're like, you ask him, well, where is this coming from? I remember reading it in the newspaper.
But conversion in saying to God, because like Islam, supposedly like Jews can convert and not to say, I mean, not against the first commandment.
I know. I'm just telling you this as an example. Okay. He didn't make this calculation if he's allowed or not. He says, I'm not giving up of being Jewish no matter what happens. That's the achievement. Continue.
Verse 9, Tanya, chapter 18. Therefore, as rulers, even the lowliest people and the sinners among Israel sacrifice their lives for the sanctity of God's name and suffer harsh torture rather than deny God's unity, even if they are boors and illiterates who are ignorant of God's greatness, even the little knowledge that they do possess is not what motivates them, for they do not delve into it at all. So by no means does their self-sacrifice result from any knowledge or contemplation of God. Rather, they are prepared to sacrifice their lives without any knowledge or reflection, but as though it were absolutely impossible to renounce the one God without any reason or rational argument whatsoever. This is so because God illuminates and animates the entire soul in a manner that is beyond any graspable knowledge or intelligence.
It doesn't make sense, and it doesn't have to make sense.
Every Jew possesses this nature, regardless of the tribe of origin, even if he is from the lowliest of the tribes, and attempts to repudiate in idolatry the source of the term duty, he is on a par with the greatest of the people.
With this is equally to Moses, to the most righteous person, when it comes to deny idol worshiping.
Find this concept expressed in the construction of the Mishkan tabernacle, the purpose of which was for God's presence to rest among the Jewish people. The two artisans drafted to construct the Mishkan were Bezalel from the tribe of Judah and
Oholiab
from the tribe of Dan.
You see, it's an interesting thing. We are going to read about the parsha of this parsha of this week. We're reading about building the temple. And there it's written that God took two people to construct the temple. Bezalel, who was a nephew of Moses, from the most elite family of the Jewish people. And Eliab was from the lowest tribe of the Jewish people, from the tribe of Dan. Why? To make sure when it comes to build a temple, there is no different. Everybody is equal. There's affirmative action, the first affirmative action. That's special for you, Mr. Michael. Affirmative action in the Bible.
The tribe of Dan is the lowest of the tribes.
You know, in every society, there is lower and higher, no matter what it is. You have in a class, there is the higher people, the lower people. In a minion, in every society, no matter where you go, nobody is equal. That's the way God created the world. The fact is that in the tribes, in the Jewish people in Israel, the Dan were the lowest tribe. They were the biggest tribe. They were that's the fact.
It's some not people, because he's the youngest or...
No.
You see, a good rabbi will try to make sure that the lowest one will not feel that he's the lowest. That's what a good rabbi will do.
Exactly. Like, just like the God is trying to do. We try to learn from God. Continue as the Midrash says.
The Midrash explains that this selection was to show that a prince is not accorded more recognition than a poor man because Judah was the most prestigious of the tribes and Dan was the lowliest. This is also true regarding repudiation of idolatry because when it comes to self-sacrifice, everyone is equal.
It means to say everybody is equal, in, for example, a minion. We don't say, oh, you're not good for the minion. This guy a little
bit. Some
people
might say that. Exactly. I don't know.
You're number 10.
You understand right. What I'm saying?
I have no problem being number 10.
I don't mind to be number 1 and find the other 9. The point is, what is a minion really if you think about it? Everybody's equal, to make everybody equal. Why you need it? Because people are not equal. The nature of human beings, the way God created it, people are not equal. Everyone has a unique something he could contribute to society, to himself. Everybody's different. But you cannot make everybody equal. It's stupid, the whole idea. But when it comes to the connection to God, to denying idols, we are all the same. From the lowest to the highest. But there is a lowest and a highest, and still in this we are the same. We are not denying there is lowest and highest. You understand? But we are in these issues. And building a temple, we are all connected the same. And your children, you love them all the same. Do they are all the children are the same? No. Every child has his unique parents. You love them the same.
Not every day.
Most of the days. Go ahead.
Yeah.
Channeling self-sacrifice to daily life. The ultimate goal of the self-sacrifice is it should be channeled to entire physical body, an entire spiritual corpus of the mitzvot. The 248 limbs of the physical body correspond to 248 positive mitzvot, and 365 sinews corresponds to 365 negative mitzvot.
It means to say, it's nice to be ready to die for the Jewish people, but on a regular day, you don't die for God. You have to live for God. Living for God means to practice, is to do. You know, I remember, I mentioned that many times. I used to ask people, you want to put on film? In Israel, the regular answer was, I'm a Jew in my heart. You know, we used to tell them, don't put everything on your heart, you get a heart attack. Spread it out. A little on your hand, a little on your head, a little on other parts of your body. Don't put everything on your heart, too much. We cannot be just the oil. The Jew is ready to die for the Jewish people. He denies idol worshiping. Let's spread it out a little bit. You know, in a regular nice day like today. Let's do it. Continue.
This is the meaning of the verse, the Jews have life and joy and jubilant and fun.
This is a famous line from the Megillah. La'yudim ha'ita ora v'simcha v'sason mikar. For the Jews it was light and joy and jubilance. It's another expression of joy. And Anno. Then the Talmud says more, it was not, it's true, they were very happy, but it reflects something deeper than that.
The Jews have life and joy and jubilance and honor. Rabbi Yehuda said, life is Torah. The verse states, the Torah is life. Joy is the festivals, as the verse states,
Well, you know what's going on here? Haman banned the Jews from doing this for mitzvahs, to study Torah, to celebrate the holidays, as he says, you're lazy, you don't do anything, to observe the mitzvah of circumcision, and to wear tefillin. Then when the decree came, when they won the fight, they were celebrating that they can do all the tefillin mitzvahs, that they can become Jewish again. The enemies of the Jews, they know what makes us identify, what identifies us as Jews. Our holidays, our Pesach. Most of the Jews in America celebrate a Seder or Hanukkah. That's what keeps them the Jewish identity. Circumcision, that's what keeps us our Jewish identity. Learning Torah, if you don't, if they knew what you want to assimilate the Jews, take away these four things from them, and they are good Chaldeans. They're good at everything, Persians. And therefore, when they were allowed to do it, they were celebrating this for. Read the Rashi.
Haman forbid Torah study, mm-hmm. festivals, the days commemorated as a festival, circumcision, holding for favor.
Continue, next page.
All the above, light enjoying Jubilee Nanda complements and explains the opening words, the Jews, Yehudim. The starting point is the Jews, self-sacrifice to repudiate idolatry. As the Alter Rebbe explains, the Jewish people had self-sacrificed to sanctify God's name. Because they had converted, Haman wouldn't have done anything to them. Rather, they stood ready all year to give up their lives and did not consider any other option. The readiness of the entire people to give up their lives for God is the merit that led to the abolition of the decree. This is what led to light and joy and jubilance and honor.
You start with ready to sacrifice, ready to deny the idol worshipping, but later you have to bring it down to real normal life, to observe, to be a Jew, not just, I hate idolatry, but let's see, tell me what you are, not tell me what you are not. Not only the negative, I am not this, but tell me, let's do it in a positive way. Thank you very much, guys.